On their way through Galilee, our gospel lesson tells us, Jesus' disciples were arguing about who was the greatest among them. But when Jesus asked them what they had been arguing about, they were silent, presumably because they were embarrassed to admit their vanity. Jesus called the 12 and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." What did Jesus mean by that? Was he telling his disciples not to aspire to greatness, to moderate their ambition so as not to stand out from the crowd? Or was he telling them that their idea of greatness was wrong, but that they should aspire to the greatness of servanthood? The words of Jesus we heard last week in Mark chapter 8 help us decide. In Mark 8, 34 and 35, Jesus says, If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. These are not the words of a teacher telling his disciples to cool it, to settle down, to curb their ambitions. Jesus does not tell his disciples to settle for less, but to give their lives for his sake. Jesus urges his disciples not to become less ambitious, but to be so ambitious that they are willing to give their lives for his sake and for the sake of the gospel. And in today's reading from Mark 9, Jesus says, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." Jesus calls us not to give up ambition, but to be ambitious for the right things, to give our lives in service to one another. Many of us, when we think about our goals in life, imagine things that we want to achieve for ourselves. Jesus has good news for us. Don't worry about how much you have achieved for yourself. Don't worry if you haven't climbed Kilimanjaro or gotten at least 3 degrees or had your rose bushes featured in Better Homes and Gardens. These are not bad things in themselves, but our ambition should be for service, not for recognition or to complete a bucket list. Instead of asking, "With what would I like to fill my life?" we should be asking, "To what or to whom can I dedicate my life?" As simple as this difference is, the difference between a life of accumulation and a life given away, we often revert to the former. Most of the messages we hear day to day appeal to our desire to fulfill ourselves, to accumulate for ourselves wealth or honors or experiences or credentials. In contrast, Jesus tells his disciples to serve, to assess our gifts, to develop them for the benefit of our neighbors. Instead of asking, "How can I distinguish myself?" we ask, "How can I best help?" The Bible gives us several exemplars of this attitude, Jesus being the foremost. Jesus went to the cross to take our sin on himself and to give us God's own righteousness, justifying the lives of us sinners and reconciling us to God. Our first lesson from Proverbs 31 gives us another portrait of greatness and the example of a capable wife, far more precious than jewels. The image is not one of oppressed subservience, but of joyful, competent, and honorable service. The wife of Proverbs 31 is not confined or relegated, but praised. She aspires to the well-being of her household. She is not ashamed to serve. She and her husband are not adversaries or competitors, but collaborators. They are on the same side. They strive for the good of one another and their family. She is a model of right ambition, of investment in others, and she is worthy of reward and honor and praise. She is an example to us all. Of course, she, like Jesus, sets an impossibly high standard, to which we mortals aspire in vain. But because of Jesus' service to us, because in our baptism into his death and resurrection, God has called us his beloved children, in whom he is well pleased. We do not let our shortcomings discourage us. We take sin seriously, we confess and repent of it, we make amends for the wrong we've done others, but we do not, paralyzed by guilt and fear of future sin, retreat to mediocrity or curb our ambition to serve. To do that would be to discount Jesus' redemption of us and God's continuing gift of forgiveness. In our second lesson, James condemns envy and selfish ambition and commends works done with gentleness born of wisdom. I love that phrase, gentleness born of wisdom. It reminds us of having the right attitude toward our neighbor, of the importance of having the right attitude toward our neighbor and our work, and that God calls us not only to mean well, but also to do well. That is, with the best intentions in the world, but lacking wisdom and lacking gentleness, we can fail to help our neighbor or even do them harm. When I was a chemist at Valparaiso University, several of my faculty colleagues and I advised pre-medical students. One of my colleagues told me that students would sometimes tell him that they wanted to do a year of service work once they graduated before they entered medical school. To which he would reply, "What kind of service do you plan to do that would be more helpful than serving an additional year as a competent physician? If you want to offer your physician services at a reduced cost or in an underserved area, by all means do that. But if you're not going to school to serve, let's talk about why you are going." He was pointing out to students that their education was for service and that what they were learning was adding value to the service they would be able to provide. Which is not to say that doing something less challenging than being a doctor, serving at a soup kitchen, for example, is not valuable. It is valuable. But wisdom guides us not merely to mean well, but also to do well as we can for our neighbors. And that usually means education and skill development to make us more helpful. It may also mean learning new attitudes and developing new habits that aren't typically taught in school, to make us better parents and spouses, neighbors, colleagues, friends, and citizens. Fruit of the Spirit like love, joy, patience, kindness, and self-control, as well as other virtues like prudence, forgiveness, honesty, tolerance, compassion, and loyalty. For these things that benefit our neighbor and reflect God's love for them, we should be ambitious. For them, we should strive for greatness. In the best cases, the goods and services we provide professionally will be a tangible sign of our love for our neighbors. In the best cases, the money we bring home from work will be a sign of our love for our family. In the best cases, commitments like marriage and the raising of children will be an expression of God's love for us, of our love for one another, and of our desire to serve each other and future generations. Humility does not mean moderating our ambition. It means being ambitious to serve well without being showered with praise or cash or prestige. It means giving credit to those who make our service possible and with whom we serve, especially if their work often goes unnoticed. And so for opportunities to serve one another, for the freedom to be ambitious to do so, for exemplars of greatness in serving, and for our justifying and forgiving God, who makes us worthy to serve and worthy to be served, thanks be to God.